everybody, and welcome to the RESCreening.com podcast. I'm your host, RESCreening.com's own Mark Eastman. And with me, as always, is co-host extraordinaire Shane Leonard.
Hello.
And this week, God, it's been a crazy couple
of weeks.
I feel
like there should be a drum roll, because I know people are
really
waiting.
There really should. There should be something. There should be sound effects. We got to get one of those, you know, things.
That would be cool.
Just hit some duck noises and, you know, whatever.
Right.
Everyone's wrong.
That's great.
Anyway, so Ghostbusters and Star Trek Beyond this week.
Right.
You know, it's really been a weird summer. I feel like I'm just going to stop saying summer. There's no summer. I'm not going to talk about summer anymore at all. But anyway, it has really been an odd, and we've talked about this in previous shows. It's been an odd kind of progression of how stuff's going.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, weird release schedule a little bit, and we've got Jason Bourne coming up and stuff. But, you know, the big releases just don't want to be right now anymore, unless you count Ghostbusters and Star Trek Beyond as being those things.
Right.
Which it's hard to do, but I guess they're what we're calling the big thing.
Right.
But it's just weird when you have like all these giant Avengers and the huge things that really do rake in the tons of cash.
Yeah.
Right. And they kind of avoid right now.
Right.
You know, people are busy.
They really front load the summer.
I wonder if they
don't start front loading the summer because of the instant gratification of the box office. Like if you wait until
But it never stays still. Either.
I know. But if you're really thinking, like, one of the last holdouts that I'm curious about, and we've said this before, is Suicide Squad. And that shows up, I think it's the first week of August.
Right. That's going to be
huge.
That's
pretty late. That's pretty late in a calendar that is dictated by stuff like, you know, superhero films in May, you know, or April,
right.
You know, so wait until August says a couple of different things that might be conflicting. But I guess if you're a studio head and you're some, you know, suit, and you're waiting to see how great your film did, you might want to release it in May to see that by June, you guys have already made your bread and butter. Hopefully,
right.
You know, I guess that makes some sense, but it's not the way it used to be. And not in a we're old men on our porch, you know, get off my lawn. I mean, just a couple of years ago, it wasn't that way.
Right.
It's just in the last handful of years, it's seemingly been really weird, but
yeah, it's an odd thing. Plus, you know, there's some weird collusion, it seems like, and yet you hear them talking as though they're angry at each other.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, like this got released on this date and now,
yeah, that was our weekend.
Yeah. Anyway. And then Star Trek found out Ghostbusters was coming out the week before and they threw like a huge party.
Yeah, right.
But
like, let's double that.
Anyway. And then, in the news, before we get to those, you know, the Olympics are coming up. It's been a couple of weeks and it's been kind of crazy, but, it's all Comic-Con.
Yeah,
obviously.
It's Comic-Con.
And no one cares anyway because they're outside catching Pokemon, so they're not looking at the news.
That
anyway, that's gone insane. But just yesterday, Comic-Con kind of broke the internet. I mean, in one day, Comic-Con blew up everything because everything released trailers.
Yeah, all at once.
Kong Skull Island released a trailer. Wonder Woman released a trailer. Justice League released a trailer. And they're actually all pretty good.
They're not bad.
So
they're not bad.
So that's helpful.
Yeah.
And then
that is helpful.
And then Alison Brie, I think, right, is Captain Marvel.
Yep.
So just like everything
ends all the speculation about
everything
who was
going
win.
Bonkers
right.
on news coming out of Comic-Con and all that stuff, which you'd expect.
I would expect.
But
I love Comic-Con time.
But still, it's yeah, it's huge. And then the Olympics are right around the corner. So then theoretically, people are going to pay attention to the Olympics.
The Olympics are so weird. Not just as a quick, you know, 20-second thing. I usually like watching the Olympics if I start watching them. Like, I never put it in my mind like, oh, the Olympics are this year. Let's block off 2 weeks.
You don't,
but if
you
I
don't
start
set
watching
it in
it,
your schedule.
No, if I start watching it, I often will just get into it. Like, it's
right.
a habitual, cyclical kind of thing. But I feel like so many people are just going to watch this year to see if they can see someone get the Zika, like
or,
who dies from drinking
right,
the water,
see
like
somebody
it just
get
seems
hurt.
It's so
right.
weird, you know.
Yeah.
It seems more like a NASCAR event where everyone wants to see a crash than a celebration
they care,
of each country.
They care who wins.
So It's weird.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how the coverage goes.
Yeah.
Because especially, you know, with summer, I mean, summer or winter, there's 10,000 things, but summer, sure, you know, there's just a billion
everybody's
events,
fighting
right?
for your stuff, yeah.
And the last Olympics coverage, I was not impressed. The last Olympics coverage that happened, it was like you'd see, you'd look in your guide on your TV and see Olympics coverage all over the place, right?
Right.
So you'd record it and put it on your DVR, yeah, right? And they'd have all these different blocks, and you're just watching the same thing. Like
yeah,
they're just rerunning the
all
same
the time. Yeah,
thing that happened before. I'm like, what? There is somebody doing some curling,
right,
that I could be watching or
yeah,
whatever. And with the Summer Olympics, you know, the Summer Olympics actually are usually better historically.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a lot more coverage, and they try to get to things. But if I don't get to see something,
yeah,
because there are events I don't even know what they are in
right,
the Summer Olympics, right? If I don't get to see something because I have to watch the same thing 50 times,
right? You're done, right?
Or you know, the thing that killed me in the Winter Olympics too is you'd watch like hours and hours and hours of interviews.
Oh yeah,
would be their coverage, and I'm like, dude, show me some Olympics.
I want to see a skier flying through.
Anyway,
there.
yeah. So now that we've babbled enough about the Olympics, another reason this is a weird time, especially for us, is because it's like our personal death year, right? It's going into this summer. And I suppose no one agrees with this, and that's why they don't listen to us anymore. But the, you know, the last few weeks we had our wedding movie before,
right,
before we had our wedding Mike movie, we had Independence Day. Independence Day, we tore apart and basically called the new worst movie ever.
It was all zeros, right?
Yeah. And then we had the Wedding Dates movie,
right,
which was not a zero, but
no,
we
but
were not
bad
at
we
all
not happy,
happy with,
right,
right? That
right,
it was horrible.
Yeah.
So, and that leads us into Ghostbusters and Star Trek Beyond.
Right.
And at some point it has to end, doesn't it?
I hope so. You know, and longtime listeners will know.
And I didn't hate Star Trek Beyond in any way,
like a previous,
you know,
like
it's,
a prior,
like it's now in my
bias,
top five most hated movies ever.
Right,
I didn't hate
right,
it like that, but I didn't love it.
Yeah.
And I'm really trying to figure out when a movie that I really like is gonna hit.
Hopefully it'll be.
And I'm hoping,
hopefully it's Born.
I'm hoping it's Born.
You know.
And I'm hoping that at the very least, even if I don't like it, at the very least, Suicide Squad is like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Even if it ends up being like say a 4 or 5.
You sat through a bad meal, but you had a great dessert.
Sure.
Like, let's
right,
just get out of the summer with a little bit of fun.
Right.
So
so now we don't even need to review these movies.
No.
So Ghostbusters,
right?
Melissa McCarthy,
Kristen Wiig,
and two people that you don't know their names,
Kate McKinnon.
Not you.
Jones.
I don't
oh,
mean
okay,
you
most
personally.
People, right? They
I mean,
recognize
the people listening
SNL,
have seen funny, them around, but they do now.
I thought you were challenging me. I'm
no,
like, I know,
because you know, they keep coming up on the internet
oh, right,
flaming stuff,
yeah,
and so now everybody knows their name.
Right, that's true.
But, you know, obviously a completely bizarre movie just in what the studio and the people involved with it have had to do to try to do something
right,
with the internet hatred that's been going on for at least a year, but pretty,
yeah,
pretty seriously since the beginning of the year.
Right.
Nobody wants a female Ghostbusters and on and on. And people are trying to have the response that
mm-hmm,
those people just don't like women.
Well, there was or, I mean, I know, I think you know this, but I mean, I'm sure you know this, but the audience might, to give it a quick recap, you know, when the first trailer went online, it was and still is the most negatively reviewed, or, you know, thumbs down on YouTube,
yeah, whatever, right?
It's the most negatively viewed trailer in the history of YouTube, which should actually say something. It's not hyperbole. But one of the things that was really interesting is the reaction that Sony had to that, which is they went in and started to remove comments from the YouTube official page. And in doing that, they were kind of incensing people because they didn't want to get rid of just, you know, comments that said this film sucks, though they probably still got rid of those. But they took away some that had some genuine criticism. And in doing so, if you believe the narrative, they they figured out that there was an overwhelming amount, because it's the internet, of misogyny.
Right.
People were just blasting the film for having dared, you know, not only just remake a great and beloved classic film, but cast four women. How dare you put women, you know,
right,
where Bill Murray stood, you
right
know? So a lot of misogynistic stuff. And someone made a really interesting decision at Sony to leave that stuff up and see if they couldn't leverage what was being criticized into something that was a no lose situation. Because if you
right
can, if you can make it so like, oh, look, everyone's picking on us, then you absolutely get a defensible position.
Right. And that, and then they try to spin it so that,
and, right,
if you don't like the movie, we're not going to pay attention to you anyway.
Right. So here's the danger that two white dudes in our comfy studio with all of our privilege, if we give a negative review about Ghostbusters, it's because we hate women.
Right. That's,
you know, it's because we're not giving them a fair share. But
that's what Sony has already said.
They've already said it, and all their proponents, and they wisely let a few leaks out to what was happening to places like Jezebel and places where there's a strong proponent of feminism.
Right, right.
Even not only the specialty sites, they came out in defense. And then you've got people who are arguing in all caps, by the way, so you know it's serious.
Right.
That they're not a misogynist. They just know shit when they see it.
Right.
And, but no, you don't, because you're not looking, you know, so there's a big hullabaloo about the whole thing.
Sony tried to basically build a giant PC shield around the movie before, this was long before the movie came out, right? This was like January and February ages ago.
So there's at least by leveraging what they, and let's not kid ourselves. Sony knew what movie they had because they've seen it.
Right.
And they could test it and they could show it to people. And once you get the yes men or the yes women out of the way, then you get a sense of what you've got. It's kind of ingenious what they did, though terribly duplicitous. Like, it's absolutely
right
crooked the way that they leverage things. But for a long time, I think the
timing was off on it too.
It is
kind of a genius thing to do. And if you know, you're a business at the end of the day,
sure, right,
you got to come up with something,
yeah,
right? So you're
right
like, well, what other option do we have? It is kind of a genius thing to do. And it's similar to the thing that started going on. This is kind of a long time ago, but like when Precious,
yeah, right,
came out,
I remember. Yeah.
There was a certain time where all of a sudden it was, they kind of preemptively struck.
Yeah.
And people started
ahead of it.
People started, who had seen the movie,
yeah,
started saying stuff like, well, I can only see one reason someone wouldn't like this movie.
Right. You have to be a racist or
right
a misogynist. Or
so
be,
so
yeah,
they like, they kind of had the same thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, people by and large really liked that movie.
Precious
anyway
was overwhelmingly,
so it ended up
right
kind of not mattering, I guess.
Right.
Or it worked perfectly. Who knows? Whatever.
You'll
like
never
no
know.
No
You'll
one
never know,
no
right
one would dare to say anything
right
bad about it at
right
that point or whatever. But I think Sony, I think they actually just, maybe they felt forced into it,
mm-hmm,
right, because of what was happening on the internet, but that kind of the timing was off. They were too early.
Yeah.
There was too much time to get like the backlash to the backlash
right
to the, you know, and whatever. It's like,
they must have known it was
the timing,
yeah,
like went so much that there was time for people to kind of be over their response
right
and not pay attention to it anymore. And then like the shield just kind of dissipates.
Yeah.
And then you're just kind of left back where you were by the time the movie comes out.
Right.
Anyway.
So there's a small hint of, you
us
know, what,
not wanting to actually
well,
talk about
of,
the
it's
movie.
It's kind of interesting because there's more to be said about the movie than the movie. You know, there's all these things going around. And now what's interesting is there are some early viewers of the film who, I'm paraphrasing greatly, where they just said, look, I didn't enjoy this movie and here's a bunch of reasons why. Just wait, you'll see. And now I think that they're feeling a little vindicated perhaps, but
right
now you're in that, you know, could it have been or could it never have been, because there's like a, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't,
right,
like it's positioned itself,
it,
still so
it
you,
is it, it's more interesting really as a social experiment,
yeah,
to try to figure out who is rating the movie on a pure basis
right
and
right
not because not because they think people are feminist, not because they're pissed that Sony tries to, you
right.
know, attack everyone who's feminist, not because even the director came out and said that on Twitter at one point
right.
and just said, if you don't like it, it's because right. you're a misogynist.
Right. And Melissa McCarthy said a bunch of stuff. Anyone who's hating on the film,
right.
you know, is just, they don't have any friends, go get someone.
Right,
you know?
Right. That's right. She said.
And I remember being insulted by that, thinking like, I wasn't a fan of the trailer, but I will do my due diligence, even though sometimes I don't have to step in excrement to know that that's crap up ahead. Like okay, you're right. I should review.
But
the
it's
movie.
Your job.
So I should review the movie instead of just the trailer.
Yeah.
That's
okay. And also, in fairness, whether you like the idea of women Ghostbusters
sure.
or care at all or yeah. hate it or whatever, the trailer is really just kind of independently bad.
It is. It's not. I remember when we were getting ready to see it, I remember saying, we were talking about it, and I just said, it would be really amazing if the film is great. And they just accidentally put out the worst trailer possible.
Right, right.
Not on purpose. Just somebody thought that was a good combination.
Somebody thought this was the way
to
go. Right.
And then you watch that film, and if we had walked out and been like, that was like a 7 or 8, but that trailer made it look like a 2.
Right.
Holy crap, that's amazing.
Right. All right. Anyway, yeah. But it is kind of interesting. You know, when you study this movie in film school, it will just be because of marketing.
Yes. Marketing.
How to do stuff.
Exactly.
Anyway, so Ghostbusters. I am really squarely at 0.
0.
Yeah. This is we said.
And it's because you hate women.
It, right.
Right.
I said before the movie was even completely over.
Right.
I think. I would watch Independence Day again.
Which if nobody listened.
Before I watch this
that's
again.
That's like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, and we gave that hard zeros. Like real bad. Like, I can't believe we finally saw something worse
that,
than Resident Evil.
That was, you know, the question of what is my least favorite movie ever is tricky, right?
Right.
But that had easily taken over the position of the movie that I least wanted to watch again.
Ever again, yeah.
Because I was watching Independence Day, and I think I talked about this when we did the show on that movie. We were watching that, and I was like, you know, I'd watch Resident Evil.
Yeah, sure.
If those were my only options.
And I don't know if it's been because it's so long.
Maybe it's just because it's long enough ago. Yeah.
But I'll do that.
And maybe that's it. But I don't have that same excuse with this movie.
Yeah.
I can't say I don't remember Independence Day enough because I remember it well, right?
Right.
And I would definitely watch Independence Day before I ever watch this again.
Right.
This was the most... Not only was it just bad, but it was just like infuriatingly bad.
Yeah.
It was so, if I can't imagine having any investment in this movie at all, a person somewhere behind the scenes, any kind of investment in this movie at all, and watching like the dailies or,
right.
you know, watching some of the parts put together in littler clumps or something as stuff is coming together and not just wanting to kill somebody.
Exactly. Or, to wreak mass havoc. And, you know,
you gave it an 8.
I can't believe that we can't give negative numbers because I would. And what's funny is when the film ended, you said what was on my mind. You just said it before I could. You were even better. You're like, well, so it's only -1 now. And I thought, -1? Put a 0 behind that. This thing
right.
is off the charts bad. I'm at 0.
That was when the trailers came up. And I said, I actually
right.
like the trailers. I like the
right.
part of the trailers. I said, so now it's only -1.
Right. I think, you know, there's no more emphatic a 0 that I can give to it. And again, the movie
you,
is
you
bad.
Like women.
I love women. I love women. And to our credit, should anyone, though I think, you know, all 5 listeners would be easily discovering this, go back and see some of the films that are women based. We didn't rip them apart for that. You did if Julia Roberts was in them because
right.
you're a big fan.
But see, that's not because I don't like women. That's because
I don't
like her.
Right. No, I know. The movie is bad for so many reasons that have absolutely nothing to do with women that the easiest thing to say to somebody is that if you had put you want to pick Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd and Ernie Hudson, you want to put them in this script and have them not ad lib, but read what is on the page. This film sucks so bad.
Right.
It has nothing to do inherently with it being with women, because the jokes aren't just like tampon humor or, you know, it's not that bad. It's bad all around. It's bad in every way. And it's bad in every way that maybe the easiest thing to say is pick four of your favorite male stars and put them in this movie. And it still sucks so badly.
Yeah.
That, you know, moving around that, I had initially, when we'd gotten back from the film, I had initially said to my girlfriend, who had asked how it was, and she knew that I was not looking
and you
forward
told
to
her it.
It
was great.
I said it was horrible. I said it was probably the worst film I've seen in a long time, and I just saw Independence Day. I just reminded her of that. And I started to tell her a couple things, because she asked a couple questions, and she said, well, wait a minute. Tell me why it's bad without, because she knows I love the original. She's like, divorce it from the original. And I said, I can't. Because as a film, this is part of one of its problems, is that it's so married to standing on the shoulders of what the original film did at the cost of its story. Like, when you watch this Ghostbusters movie, I think, unless you are very young or very new to watching movies, Ghostbusters is such a touchstone, you know, pop culturally, but I think you have to understand everything that happened in 1984 to really get this film.
You do. You
because
have
to take such lazy storytelling.
It's such a weird thing too. And I don't know that it's absolutely one of the negatives of the movie where I would say yes. And that's on the checklist of why I hate it.
It made it on mine.
It's maybe on the checklist of why it's a
bad
stupid thing. Right. But it's not like, I guess, whatever the hierarchy is of things I hate about this movie. I don't know that it's absolutely towards the top, but it is very true. The movie, even though what we should be having, or what we think we're going into, especially since it's all new characters and we're starting from scratch,
right,
is that we've got like a total reboot,
right.
Except that this movie is demands that you know the first movie in a way that almost makes it like a sequel.
It's got all this stuff happening
that it's not doing any work with it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're just going, oh yeah, because I remember the first one.
Right. To the extent that there are lines explicitly cribbed and said, which seems like such fan service, and I get what they want. They want to pay this great homage and have this great, you know, arm in arm, wink, wink, nod, nod relationship with what it is clearly trying to. And I feel like it's like what you said. I actually see it more of a remake. Because the story is, in essence, like, still just swap out the guys and put the girls in.
Right,
they're, you know, scientists at Columbia and et cetera. But you can't have that with all the little nods to things that are ultimately very distracting for me. I didn't see these things as, you know, if you're watching an X-Men movie or any franchise film and you see some mutant in the background, you're like, oh, right, there's Firestorm.
Right.
You know, and you're like, that's kind of cool. I get that he's in the same universe. He may not be in this movie, but it's a nod to something that you would get here, like from the very first, you know, scene. Well, the first scene is actually kind of enjoyable. And I think we'll both agree that the movie was strangely fun for the first 15 to 20 minutes and then precipitously just horrible.
Right. But it wasn't, it wasn't straight through those 20 minutes, right? There are parts of 20 minutes you have to cut out.
Yeah.
But there was good stuff, and it's all related to the first house.
Right. Sure.
For me, it's all that house. Part of it.
Yeah.
But anyway, what were you getting to?
When you first see Kristen Wiig and she's at her prestigious Ivy League school and the dean comes in and talks to her about the tenure she's about to get and he leaves, we are shown the first kind of Easter egg, which is a bust of Egon Spengler in the hall. I don't know if you saw that actually.
No.
It's Harold Ramis. And when you walk out, you know, when he walks out the door and he walks past and it's standing right there. And you're looking at it and you're like, okay, so it's in the same universe, because he would only have that honor for being the guy that saved New York.
Right.
You know, and that's the world.
Except that then it turns out that that can't be true.
That can't be true. Right. Right. So it does these things even from the get-go, but it plays tongue in cheek. And it's hard to actually talk a bit about this. And we have two films to talk about, so the spoilers will come pretty quickly, I think. But there are some cameos that I know we're going to get to because we have
Oh,
to.
Sure. Yeah.
But even as the story progresses, like when they start getting together and the story is kind of clumsy and I feel like I'm patching great pieces of missing narrative together because I've seen the original. You know,
right,
I know
right.
these guys have to get together. These women have to get together. And these are the reasons why you introduce these proton packs. And there's no excitement to the definition of what it is or example of it. It's because it depends on you already having known that these are what they do and these are why they're here.
Right.
And it proceeds along to doing so many annoying things like trying to, I mean, these are very minor, but again, these are very easy things for this type of argument when they go to look for a place to have their business. And it turns out to be the same fire station.
Right.
And they go in to show the fire station as a big bit of fan service. But the joke there is to be built up that they can't afford the fire
that
station.
They don't get it.
So they've got
it, right.
to go to like above a Chinese food store. Okay. Right. I get that. But really of all of those things, that might've been the most innocent of it. Cause it's kind of,
but
cute,
but it's also a good example just because it leads into the Chinese food thing of the things that
right.
somebody thinks
is
are funny.
Funny, right?
And none of it is funny, right? And even to the extent that, you know, the whole thing with the wonton soup, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel, and I could be totally wrong,
yeah,
I feel like Melissa McCarthy did that and
right.
forced it onto the movie,
right?
And said, this is
There's-
funny, and And for the first couple of seconds that that happens,
right.
it's kind
it's
of
okay.
funny.
Right.
Then it's like a total of 10 minutes of the movie.
Exactly.
I mean, because
it keeps happening.
It keeps coming back.
Yeah.
She keeps talking about it.
Right.
And I just feel like that humor,
yeah.
the fact that you think that that stuff is funny,
right.
is so exactly the same as all of Melissa McCarthy's movies that she's done
right.
so far
right.
by herself with her husband, like Tammy
right.
and
right.
all that stuff. It's the same exact kind of humor. And I feel like what you end up having here is people like Melissa McCarthy and maybe Kristen Wiig to a certain extent, but especially obviously Paul Feig.
Right.
Who have this at this point kind of status of
mm-hmm.
what is funny.
Right.
And they just go funny and you're going to do it.
Right.
And,
right.
and there's no round table of people going, well, is that funny? Because who's going to tell Melissa McCarthy that what she says is funny is not
right.
funny. So
right.
I guess that's in the movie now
it.
And you'll all be watching Wonton Soup forever. Right.
right. There's an element there, which is one of the reasons why I love South Park so much, because they can put topical things in right away because it takes them no time to make a show. But there's an element to the film, which though I actually did wind up appreciating it intellectually, but I hated it thematically, where there's that, which I think is a specific dig on, thankfully, that's as close as it comes to Melissa McCarthy having a fat joke or a joke about food.
Right.
Or, I mean, certainly it's a joke about food and it's, you know, it's along the lines of eating all these things, but that's as close as it got, which I thought was rare.
Yeah.
Usually she heavily hands
that's
that
in a really weird way. That's the best part about this movie is that she's not trying to squeeze between any turnstiles.
Right.
Like it's,
right.
She
doesn't have trouble getting in the jumpsuit.
It's like her, it's like her and Kevin James. In, you know, like the last five movies, either one of them has been in.
Pick one.
That's like, it's like all it is. And so we at least avoided that.
So they do that. And then just another quick example, because we have so many to hit. Excuse me. They, when they're talking about, when they put the video footage of the ghost that they do see
right.
online, there's a quick throwaway line where she says, don't look at the comments, that, you know, the comments are just horrible, you know, this kind of thing. And I'm like,
right.
That's funny. Actually,
yeah.
That's it. That's all right. But In terms of where I feel about the hierarchy of why I didn't like it, like what you just said perfectly, there's probably 10 minutes of wonton humor. And I'm okay,
right.
humor. Now I'm doing the air quote thing for humor.
Especially because it's the only entrance we have for the guy who's the delivery guy.
Right.
And we have to stare at him a lot.
A lot.
Because basically, like, just him being exasperated
right.
is really funny.
Right.
And you know, like, the first time it is
a little bit.
Right. It's,
you know,
okay.
I get it. Yeah.
But then it just keeps happening and happening.
This whole notion of wasting time on things that aren't funny ultimately makes me feel like I'm actually watching a movie of outtakes.
Right.
You know,
right.
I'm not watching the movie they wanted to make, because if this is the movie they wanted to make, they deserve the backlash. Like, not because they're women, but because this is stupid.
But because they're not,
and it's not funny.
None of it's funny.
And there's no story that they're telling, except when they're relying on the genesis of a story. Everyone who's seen the film knows inherently.
Right.
So it just, it's one more brick in a huge wall that's obstructing me from enjoying the movie that shouldn't be that hard to do with technology. If you tell me you're going to make a new Ghost, probably make a killer science fiction, you know, an FX film,
right,
know, with what we have. Even the ghosts, not to pile on what is obvious, but the ghosts don't even look good.
No.
And the ghosts create different problems later. Like, I think we both said the same thing. There's a scene that only exists to serve fan service because we got to have the Stay Puft Marshmallow guy appear.
Right.
And he appears as a big possessed balloon, not a ghost, but there are ghostly balloons somewhere.
Right.
And you just, you have this really unfunny scene just to have this moment to show something that is from the original film that should mean we take this seriously. And it only winds up undermining everything and distracting everything. And where's the real story here?
Right.
What are you guys doing but showing up? And ultimately, my biggest gripe is that that's what I have. I have an obvious attempt from Sony to take a product off the shelves that they know has brand name marketing to it and try to get more money out of my wallet for toys, tie-ins, posters, catchphrases. But all the catchphrases that they come up with are from a movie that's, you know, 30 years old,
right,
and has been done before. There's no originality.
And
they didn't feel...
The beauty of it for me, though, is that they're actually going to sell less Ghostbuster stuff than they were before, now. So I feel good about
that. There's just, like, as frustrating it is, because I actually do think... I like Kristen Wiig a lot. You know, I think that in the last few years between... between doing things like the secret Life of the Teenage Girl, I'm butchering that title.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. The Skeleton Twins, like her range in the last just 5 years has been amazing to watch.
Right.
And I actually think on top of all that, she's funny.
Yeah. And, you know, and, also since you're mentioning some other stuff that, that show, what is it like? Welcome to Me, I think.
Yeah.
The one where the one where she's crazy and wins the lottery.
Yeah.
That movie was awesome.
Isn't it great? Yeah. So, you know, ultimately what it comes down to is bad acting, but not because they're women and can't act, but because everything they seem to do is unbelievable to me. And this is where, you know, Kate McKinnon comes in. She's so funny on Saturday Night Live.
Right.
She's really great. But this character, it's almost like someone just said, hey, imagine when Jim Carrey did The Mask and nobody could tell him not to do anything. You do that.
Right.
Be Jim Carrey in The Mask like 1994, except you're a Ghostbuster. Okay, go.
But she had parts in the movie where she actually, you know, came very close
to making you
to being
funny,
fairly good,
right,
or
right,
to at least letting the movie have a couple of scenes that you could enjoy.
Yeah.
She didn't really get there
no,
because she couldn't.
The script
because
let her.
She's so, you know, shackled even
absolutely,
still
yep,
that as much as she tries, like that scene that you get in the trailer where it, she,
oh,
you know,
right,
suddenly goes boo, and she's like, "Is the hat too much?
Right.
Is it the wig, or
the hat?"
You know,
yeah,
that's actually, if you just take like that 10 seconds,
right,
like completely out of the movie, you know, it's kind of funny. She can deliver that sort of stuff really well,
absolutely.
Right? But it still can't get anywhere in the movie because you have to watch that
right
in the midst of
right,
you know, the horribleness.
To her credit too, though not specifically, I could see Bill Murray doing something like that in a Ghostbuster movie.
Right.
As Venkman. Because Venkman's this playful, goofy guy. Like,
right,
he's not going to put a mop on his head. But I could see him doing that to get a quick joke.
But, you know, that was part of the problem since, you know, we haven't really ripped on the movie too much except for saying that it's just not funny. But all of the stuff that happens in this movie, you know, like you were saying, where's the plot? And there is a plot to the movie. There's a bad guy, and which is different already,
right,
that there's kind of a bad guy.
Right.
But there's a bad guy. There's a story to why these things are happening. It's, you know, kind of a little goofy how it ties in, but also it's not actually that bad how it ties in, because we see that first haunted house at the beginning of the movie. That part's actually pretty good when we're watching that stuff happen. It's fun, right?
Yeah.
And but then it leads them back together, and everything about them coming back together is kind of horrible. But one of the things that stands out about the characters, like you said, you know, you said you could see Bill Murray doing that.
Yeah.
But is she supposed to be Venkman? Because, you know, to a certain extent, really, Melissa McCarthy is supposed to be Venkman.
Right.
And who's playing who, and are is anyone playing an actual character at all? That was the one of the real nails in the coffin for me of this movie, is that no one's actually anyone. First of all, Melissa McCarthy's just playing Melissa McCarthy.
Right.
Melissa McCarthy at this point is basically like Costello.
Right.
Like, she just plays Costello in every movie she's in, right?
Yeah.
She just plays Melissa McCarthy. Her the names of her movies might as well be, you know, like Melissa McCarthy Meets the Wolfman or whatever. I mean, because she just plays that exact role. She doesn't really have a character anyway.
Right.
And everybody else is not, it's not that we're taking the characters exactly, even though we have like a scientist guy, you know, it's like, somebody involved in making this movie thinks that what it means to have those same characters is that one of them's a scientist. So we show one of them being a scientist. So now that's that character, right? And they're like a mix of the characters too. Like even Kristen Wiig is supposed to be the brainy scientist person, but also, you know, she's goofy. And,
she's the Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray version of
But
them.
they are all just this weird splicing of characters, and they're all whatever character I think is kind of funny in this scene.
Mm-hmm.
Like the film is built. It's a little interesting to think about. If you go back over the last three or four shows and all of the complaints that we had about bad movies, and this movie just said, well, what if we just do all of those
in one movie?
Because this, you know, I feel like I've said this recently, but the movie has all these characters where what actually you have is, you know, that whole thing you were talking about with the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, somebody thought that was an interesting scene to film.
Right.
Somebody had this idea of let's do this and that's how we'll do it. And the whole movie is just like spliced together.
Right.
And then they try to build some comedy out of it. And then you say, but what characters do we have here now? Well, so she has to be like this now then, because that's what works in this scene. So it has nothing to do with her character or what would happen.
Right.
And even going into the beginning, it's just bizarre. Melissa McCarthy is kind of a Ghostbuster to begin with.
Right.
She's doing this with McKinnon.
Right.
At some, you know, like the whole association of colleges could sue the movie for slander, you'd think, with what they got going. But anyway, she's running this thing, trying to continue the work that they did before when they wrote this book. And that's why they're coming back together now. But Melissa McCarthy, when she comes back, is just an idiot.
Yeah.
I mean, she's
lucky to not electrocute herself with all the stuff in her
office, it's like you know, Bluto 20 years later is working at a thing, and now but he's still an idiot, right? And she's just a goof and making stupid jokes and you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden they see a ghost, and now we love each other again. And it's like it's making a weird statement to me for a movie that is so pissed about misogyny, right? It's making some very weird statements about how women work in its story for it to complain to me about being a misogynist.
Well, you know, like what you're saying, as far as the characters go, it's hard to, for somebody to think, and again, it's just sloppy. It's sloppy in a way that they're an amalgamation of all these things that they feel was the hit of the first film.
Right.
You know, and in the first movie between Harold Ramis, Dan Aykroyd, and Bill Murray, even before Ernie Hudson shows up, you've got the brain, you've got the mouthy guy, the funny, the guy that might be annoying if you weren't him. And I always thought that was easy. Like as a unit, it represents, you know, Egon is the brain, And Ray is the heart. And Bill Murray is Venkman. He's the mouth. He's the
right.
one that's going to schmooze. And then eventually you get Ernie Hudson, who's like the hands and feet. And now you got a team.
Right.
Here, whatever the scene seems to feel like it needs, oh, wait, now you're going to be the brainy one right now. Like, be really smart. But
right.
overdo everything because you're also kind of crazy.
It's like what happened. You know? It's like what happened is they're filming a scene, right? And they go, okay, this is what we need to happen in this scene for it to be funny, right?
Right.
And then they go, oh, well, so we need this character to act this way. And somebody said, that's not how that character acts.
Right.
And then you go, yeah, but the other character is already in this other place.
Right.
And we already shot that.
And we need this.
So we've yeah. got that. So she yeah. can't suddenly be here.
Right.
So this character is like this now.
Right.
And that's how we'll do it for the rest
you
of
know,
the film.
There's bad acting for me almost throughout. So much so, and you and I both noticed this at the same time, too. Even times where Kristen Wiig isn't even in the scene, and I'm not making fun of her. You know, you had commented like it looks like she's looking off scene to like craft services, like
right,
she's ready for
right.
lunch. And I noticed in this scene, she's on her mark and she's got her eyes open, but it doesn't look like she's in the movie. And that's again, I think that happens to some extent later on too. They look like they're just riffing and they're like, oh wait, you guys are going to use that? You're going to use that take?
Right. There are parts in the movie, like I said this when we first walked out, there are parts in this movie that you're watching this movie and you can just see that they don't even think it's funny.
Right. You can tell. You
they're
see it in
they're
their
giving they're
yeah.
giving lines and going, somebody thinks this is funny, I guess.
I'm getting paid
but
a lot to
hear
this.
Here you go.
Okay.
Here's
right.
the line.
You know,
and they just are acting like they don't even think it's funny.
This sounds like it's the easiest hit list in the world, but the film I saw had horrible acting in it. It was heartlessly directed. Like it just had no inspiration to be anything other than a cash
grab.
I
don't know if I'm that harsh on the acting either.
We
have differing views on the acting.
I thought the acting was
at some point. I think, listen, if you're an actor, now some of the actors definitely did not do great work.
Sure. I know what you're gonna say though. Like
but right. If you're told to do something
right.
bad and you do it,
is that great.
Is that bad acting?
No.
It's maybe not great acting. It's not anything magical to write home about or something. But if you have agreed to do this movie
mm-hmm.
and you've got Paul Feig going, do this and do it like this,
right.
and then you do it and you do it like that, is that bad acting?
Here's what I mean.
I'm not sure that's bad acting.
Specifically with Kate McKinnon, but easily with like Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig to some extent, you're actually bigger than, you know, the project. Okay. You're not 19 and you're in Martin Scorsese's movie and you're going to do exactly what Marty wants. Then if you do something bad, that's on Marty. But in this, I feel like Paul Feig just showed up and said, we got four of the funniest women on the planet right now. And this is a hilarious movie. All we got to do is film you. Go. Their decisions that they made to play the characters the way they did, I don't feel is too much on Paul Feig. I feel that's them because they're bigger than that role allows. So the leash that they're on is enormous. I credit them with doing some things right. But overall, I thought the acting was bad.
Yeah.
Now that also comes on the heels of saying that I think Paul Feig did a really bad job directing this thing.
Right.
And I think
writing it.
And he, with his partner, wrote an incredibly abysmal and lazy and unmotivated screenplay
right.
that took so much from other sources and expected me to fill in everything else. I didn't like the special effects. I
right.
wasn't wowed by anything that I saw. In fact, I was actually put off by what
there
I
was,
saw.
There was nothing funny that happened
especially,
in the whole movie.
Especially when they, right, it's as a comedy, it's the most unfunny thing I've seen, and not because they're women,
and
but because
it,
it's written
and
dumb.
And like you said, with the writing and the directing, and basically you're the writer and director, and you co-wrote it with
right.
the person who co-wrote the Heat or
right.
whatever. And you're Paul Feig and you're in charge.
You
co-wrote it,
but
you're
right.
in charge. And you've got all this, and all this movie does almost from start to finish, except for the first part,
right.
which I still like.
I still like that.
I still kind of stand behind that thing because that's just a pretty fun scene. And not
yeah.
only that, not only is that a good scene, But that scene really actually, I feel like, had kind of the spirit of the first movie.
I was just going to say, it really replicated it, right? What it was going to do. And you and I both admitted after.
And then, all of a sudden, it just, like, the whole movie ran screaming the other direction. Right.
I almost looked over to you and went, this might
right, exactly.
Like, this is actually good. So.
But you've got him directing and writing and really being the power behind it. And almost every second of this movie is doing nothing but calling you stupid.
Yeah. And I finally see what you mean.
This whole movie is just going, you're so stupid that you'll like this. Right. And as the creative force behind it, right, he is writing a script going, people are so stupid that this is the kind of stuff that they'll like, right, and they'll like it. And he's almost, apparently he's, I think, just got, he's got like kind of an M Night.
This thing
going on. Right.
Yeah.
He did one thing that people really loved and still really loved. And he's instantly got like an insane ego about it.
Right.
And everything that he's done since has just been really like, you know, it's funny because I said it. It's
don't
not,
you know
it,
who I am. I'm.
It's not like he, you know, he says something he thinks is funny, and then it's funny because he said it. It's not funny for any reason. If somebody doesn't laugh, then they're a misogynist, other reason that you know, whatever. I mean, it's really weird.
Even where sometimes a film like this can be saved in a good performance by an antagonist, the villain in this is one of the most forgetful, uninteresting villains. I mean, this is just like an emo terrorist.
And just really,
I mean, just
I think what it is, I think that because, like I said, I'm trying to figure out the theory of comedy, right? The sense of comedy going on. And I think ultimately, now that I've thought about this movie for a little while, that this is like Melissa McCarthy and maybe Paul Feig kind of together.
Yeah.
Think that what was a really funny idea was, let's have a villain who's like the anti-villain.
Right.
Let's have the bad guy in something. It will be hilarious that the villain in something is like the biggest sheep, you know, character who's ever existed, and he will be the guy who's about to destroy the world.
Right.
And just that in itself will be hilarious. So everything that comes out of that will, you know, be funny by definition or something.
It had no interesting characters. You know, even Andy Garcia, who I was happy to see finally on screen again in something, played a photocopy of a photocopy of a photocopy of the politicians in the first movie.
Right.
And, you know, the obstructionism that, I mean, it's just.
And it was all the scenes with him, I thought, I think especially if you get the scene where they meet him, right, and then put that with the scene in the restaurant,
right,
everything about those scenes, I think, is like a little microcosm of why the whole movie completely sucks, because everything that he does, it's so like reading a graphic novel of those scenes by someone who's never read a graphic novel and doesn't understand why people like graphic novels. He's such a caricatured, nonsensical person who just says lines. And again, I think what's supposed to be funny about that is exactly why it's awful and I hate it.
Right.
Right? What's supposed to be funny is, you know, look how stupid and ridiculous we can make him, and we can compare that to real politicians, and that will be fine.
Right.
And it's, you know, I don't know.
I also think there's no chemistry between anybody.
There's not really
and
a lot.
It just,
no.
I mean, like, on and on. If it was only one gripe, if the story was great, the directing was great, the sound, the music, the special effects, I just didn't like the acting, it would be easier to take. But you start adding every single thing that can go wrong with a movie, everything, you know, you got a really, really, really bad movie here. And you don't understand what you need to do to elevate this.
There are
and
even
I'll tell
some
you,
scenes.
The thing that you don't do to elevate it is sprinkle in cameos by every single person who was in the original film. That doesn't elevate anything. That's a plot jarring like halt to what I'm even trying to do for the film,
right,
for its own benefit. It's not that I'm waiting for the next one to come. It's that they're all stupid. Well, there was an element to what I had seen. Once the film ended, I thought, not even to be anti-misogynist in its debate, but to just say, like, I guess I'm doing all the heavy lifting if I suggest that this is an alternate reality where, because when Ernie Hudson shows up, and Ernie Hudson, now we're spoiling, if Ernie Hudson shows up and he's the uncle's, you know, if he's Leslie Jones' uncle who she gets the hearse from, who's their car, and, you know, he's a mortician, that's kind of funny where you start thinking like, okay, Bill Murray's like the skeptic. And in the first film, he wasn't.
Right.
Ernie Hudson was talking about dead bodies, like the dead coming back to life. You know,
right.
They're all kind of similarly, like all being these things that they would have been in another universe. But now I'm doing too much work to justify what you're just trying to do, which is fan service me into forgetting that the film sucks because, oh, Bill Murray and
right.
Dan Aykroyd are in it. And I just, you know, as much as it really sucked thinking this way, by the time Leslie Jones kept talking about her uncle this and her uncle that and all these things, and I thought, holy crap, did they just cast her to throw color in because everybody's white in the screenplay, but did they only make her the black person so they could bring Ernie Hudson in as a cameo and tie this together?
Because we wanted that
I want to believe that they're less insensitive than that. I don't think it was malicious, but I'll be damned if I can't justify that they're stupid enough to think that. I think they are.
Yeah, who knows?
I think they
who
really
knows
did
how,
that.
There's no bar anymore for how stupid
exactly,
they might be.
Right?
So that's the problem is you start thinking of stupid things and you want to go, they're not that stupid. But they've proven
that
there's no bar, right? So they could be infinitely
I can't
stupid.
Dislike this film anymore. I just thought it was I
no,
hated it.
Everything about it. Everything about it is terrible. And like I said, everything about it is basically calling you stupid.
Yeah.
It's weird because there is the movie screams out all of its construction in such a bizarre way that in itself is, you know, pulls you out of everything, right? Because there's so much stuff that happens that you can just see the horrible ways that this came together and came to be a movie. And a lot of it, you know, like I said, a lot of it is somebody has an idea for a scene. And like I said, I feel like I've said this in the last 4 or 5 months so often that it, you know, it's starting to drive me crazy, but somebody has an idea for a scene and they go, I don't know, get that scene in the movie somehow.
Right.
I'm not saying I know what the plot of the movie is or the script or anything, but this is a funny idea I had and it needs to be in there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's like, if it's not that, then there's a lot of this movie that there is this weird kind of making a movie at summer camp vibe to it where, you know, like that scene and we see it in the trailer where, Leslie Jones is smacking her, right? And, smacks the demon out of her or whatever. And there's something about that scene where that scene is not funny at all. Nothing about that scene really worked from Melissa McCarthy being possessed and being really bad at it.
Yeah. Oh,
and,
man.
And, filming, you know, trying to catch the person at the window and the head spinning around and all that stuff. There's actually nothing funny about that scene. Not for me. I didn't think anything was. I didn't think anything was good about that scene. But if I'm at film camp and I have to film that scene, and I have to be one of those people and I have to be Leslie Jones, that would be fun as hell, to do, I don't want anyone to watch it or think that it's good or whatever. And there's so much of this movie that I swear that's all I can feel about what's happening in front of me is they think because they had fun filming that, that now it's good.
That translates.
That something is good about it or that something funny happened or that it's hilarious. It's like, I swear, filming that scene, that whole scene could have been just a spontaneous thing that happened. Where, you know, it's like somebody's pranking somebody on the set or something. Or you know, like Melissa McCarthy just all of a sudden goes, I'm possessed, and starts like walking around. And Leslie Jones just runs with it. And they're and they're doing like
improv.
And they're bored and they do something. And, and then when it's over, they both can't stop laughing. Because it's just hilarious. And then they go, put that in.
Right. That's great. Let's use that.
Right. And no one watched it from the other side. And when they watch it from the other side, all they remember is how funny it was making it. Right.
It certainly has that feeling. Yeah.
There's like scene after scene in this movie where that's what I'm thinking. What I'm thinking is they're just at camp making this movie and they're having tons of fun doing it. And at the end they go, that movie must be awesome.
Right.
And so everyone will love it. And it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Anyway. And you're left to gouge your eyes out, and that's it.
It's hard because I actually think there's a lot of talented people working on that film. I just think that, you know, to get a paycheck, everybody, including the original cast, they got a lot of money to show up and do this film.
Right.
And, you know, maybe they thought
and
they could
make
it.
And some of them were literally on set for like 5 total minutes.
Yeah.
And that includes parking the car.
Yeah. Right.
And that's how much they're in the movie.
You know, I hope what it does is I hope if anything, the lesson from Ghostbusters is that the next time they want to remake something and they are going to want to, cause I think I think it's the same company that keeps remaking like RoboCop, it feels like these are all Sony films that they just keep like, hey, we've had this on the shelf long enough. Let's see if anybody remembers.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully the next time it comes around, people are a little bit, you know, choosy in what they want to do. Although I know for a fact, sometimes people are like, you've said this, I can't remember what it was. Oh, it was the Mike and Dave Get Wedding. You're like, who's going to turn down a trip to Hawaii
for
a month just to shoot the crap out of whatever we want to do all day?
Right.
Like, it's hard to get people to say no.
It's the same thing. Like, you know, I was saying, you know, somebody involved would sign up and said, but I'm going to drive some ATVs around.
Right. And
so
I'm going to hang out in the sun.
Get
do
that
some
in the movie. Right.
If somebody was going to pay us to go hang out and have a lot of fun at some theme park for a while, I might take it even if the show sucked.
Right.
You know, because you're going to hang out with your friends. Think a little bit better about maybe not everything is remakeable.
Especially since it's actually still not well received. Right.
Right.
I mean, I think on Metacritic,
and
the last time I looked, it was about
35. You remind me of Precious. The one that comes to mind in my past is always Saving Private Ryan. Where I remember seeing it with a bunch of people who were very quiet about their dislike about the movie, saying, I can't say anything about this movie because it's too real. And if I say something, I'm unpatriotic.
Right. Or like,
you know,
Schindler's List or something.
Right. You're just
you
like,
know.
If I thought this is boring, I'm a monster.
Right.
You know, and in some way, the high reviews that people are giving this film, it's like this perfect catch-22 situation where I know a lot of people who are giving this thing high ratings because they want more women and more films. And I understand that, but you don't use this as a vehicle to do
right.
it because it subverts your own argument. And I know people who are giving it such a hard rating, which I thought might be too harsh, but here we are looking at negative numbers
right.
and I'm thinking there's nothing too harsh. But if you can come up with a logical reason why you didn't like it instead of how dare they cast women, then your negative rating doesn't
right.
hold any water for me. But it's a little misleading because right now this thing is at like 70 on it's at 60, I think, on like Metacritic. I didn't look at Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh no, on Metacritic though, when I looked, it was like 38 or something.
Was it really? It was really high when I looked, and I just thought that's so terribly misleading because you have one side just trying to prop it up because they like the intention of what
right.
they're doing. And let's rate, you know, if we're going to rate good intentions, if we're rating good intentions, this film gets an F anyway, because the intention was grab a lot of money
right.
off nothing original. We'll just take all the lines that were really great from the original film and
right.
make other characters
and
say them.
You know,
that shit just insults me.
The weird and horrible thing is that we haven't really that much talked about this as a reboot of like
right.
a classic movie. Because you don't need to, because
right.
the comparison is irrelevant. This movie would have to be like 4 or 5 stars better than 0 for you to even have it become a relevant
right.
conversation
right.
about what it does or doesn't do to the original.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, talking about intentions, you know, the weird thing for me is this is the most misogynist movie
mm-hmm.
I've seen in a really long time. This
yeah.
movie hates women.
Right.
And has no positive thoughts about them and doesn't think they're worth making a good comedy movie. So
I know we're getting off.
Send
this.
Your emails to
right. That's MarkEastman@everything.com.
Yeah.
You know, when the last quick thing that when we're watching the film and the bad guy, since we're spoiling everything, the bad guy turns into the big bad thing that they
oh,
have to fight,
right.
And he turns into the animated Ghostbuster symbol
right.
that is famous. You know, that's what they used for everything. And then he becomes like the literal, like kind of Nightmare Before Christmas, Oogie Boogie version of that.
Right, thing. Right.
The moment he turns into a cartoon and I'm watching that and I went, no, you didn't. You really, you're going to go, of course you did.
Yeah.
You dumb asses. Like, because, I can't believe. And I thought, I can't get any more irritated at the movie. But guess what? That irritated me because I'm like, what are you doing with Roger Rabbit?
But you know what? You know what's funny about that for me?
I was just so annoyed.
I liked that part in an odd theory of liking things, right? I liked that part because what was so great about that part for me was in the original movie, right? It's we're getting into this all scary, you know, thing, and then all of a sudden it's the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man,
right?
And that's awesome.
Sure, it is.
Right, that's actually like a really brilliant decision, right?
Yes.
And here's a movie remaking that movie that doesn't understand why that was good at all, and goes, well, we'll turn him into this big cartoon
of the
thing or whatever, and then that will be good because it was good in that other movie.
Yeah.
And they don't understand at all what made that an interesting part of the movie.
Yeah.
And then, since we're spoiling everything, I just have to say about the movie, too, before we move on, that one of the real, I think, not serious nails in the coffin, because the movie was already dead and buried by this point, right?
Done.
So it can't quite be something that really pushed me away from the movie.
Yeah.
But we have this whole, like, theory of what the bad guy's doing and why he's doing it. And he has a plan, and he's releasing the ghosts and, you know, yada yada, right? Which I'm not sure makes any sense as a plot that he sets off these bomb things when he doesn't need to.
Right.
It doesn't actually serve a purpose because he's got his final bomb thing.
Always,
he could have just sat there by himself. No one would ever known he was there and set off the giant bomb at the end. They don't at least tell us somewhere in a script that part that got deleted. Maybe they explain why he needed to do the first ones or whatever.
Right.
But in the movie we get, it doesn't make any sense. But then the plan is to release all these ghosts and they'll destroy everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, what a brilliant plan, except that then the movie turns out to basically make him practically omnipotent.
Right. To get you right.
And then he actually didn't need to do that in the first place.
Right.
All he needed to do was whatever magical way he comes back, which they don't explain at all, why he gets this connection to whatever and he suddenly gets to be omnipotent.
Right.
But he doesn't need both.
Right.
But we had one scene where we want this to happen.
Right.
We have to have an explanation for a ghost coming out in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So we make up this nonsense.
Right.
But then in a later scene, we want this to happen. So wait, he has superpowers now.
Right.
And it's just like whatever I feel like kind of works
anytime
at the time,
whether
as a whole that plot makes any sense or not.
I can't believe you made me watch
that. I didn't make you watch it. Okay. moving on.
Yeah.
Really quickly. Star Trek Beyond. And this,
I wonder if I got this right. I got your zero right. I guess
this,
your grades.
This is a movie. This is a movie that is also a little weird for us too, because you hate Star Trek.
I hate the new Star Trek.
The new movie.
The J.J. Abrams ones
are really awful.
Yeah.
I don't like them.
Right. But you're not
but,
as strong.
But
against
I'm
it.
A lot more lenient towards them than you have been.
Yeah.
Although, you know, when you give something one and I give it, you know, four, that's, you know, not like really
it's
super
not,
super lenient or whatever.
Yeah, but
yeah, and this movie has some interesting things going for it. So we have a different director. We're also kind of in a different space in a weird way in the franchise.
Oh, okay.
We're in like because we're not starting things.
Okay, right. I know what you mean.
We're not like booting the whole system again.
Right.
And we've kind of moved on at this point to where basically this is an episode of the show.
Right.
Yeah. We're kind of like in episodic content territory now where we have our people.
Yep.
And now we just have something else to happen to them,
right.
but it's a different,
yep.
It's a different kind of arena. which is kind of interesting because the first Star Trek movie started off there.
Yeah.
It just started off as like an episode. Right. And we had to, you know, get reacquainted with the characters in certain ways and, you know, yada, yada. Yeah. But this one is different because we're not starting over. We don't have to establish anything really. We don't have to spend any time doing that. And so we're just, you know, off to the races in an episode. Anyway, this one was a little tricky for me because I felt the episodicness of it when we were watching it a little bit too much. This one felt to me like the story was somebody just said, here, make an episode of this. Mm-hmm. I know you don't really have any story you want to tell. You don't have anything going on. It's like we're in a TV series where it's like the seventh season and people really start scratching their head.
Right.
Right. They're going, shit, what else can happen now? I don't know. And you give it to a writer and you go, look, man, write something,
right?
Make an episode. It's not like you're writing a screenplay and you have some story you're trying to get across. It's like you're writing a screenplay of a franchise because something else has to happen now because we have to make another movie in the franchise. And it was weird how much I felt that.
Yeah.
I really felt watching this movie like we could have just trimmed it down to an episode of an hour long show.
Right.
And we'd have been fine.
It would have, yeah.
There would have been no thing. Anyway, but I did have a lot of fun with it, and a lot of parts I had fun with anyway, and a lot of parts I really hated. So, but at the end of the day, I was really pretty strong in my conviction that this was 4.
Oh, I got that right. I got that right.
It was.
I have to change it.
It was really so strongly 4.
Yeah.
There were lots of stuff I didn't like. There was lots of stuff I didn't like about it. There were lots of times where I was kind of okay with it and I thought it was fun. And, you know, one of the big things where I think maybe I was just coming off of Ghostbusters and that wasn't helping anything, but I really felt like I was just at the point where if this movie had been calling me stupid, I'd have been, you know, way down to at least 2.
Right.
Because there was enough stuff that I didn't like about it. And the stuff that I did like about it, or the stuff that was good and I had fun with it, it wasn't counterbalancing anything if I had some real serious hatred. So it would have gone down fast. Right. But in the end, it was like a 4. It was a good time, but there was a lot of stuff I didn't like about it.
In almost every way, I agree with everything you just said, especially the overall feeling of the film. I'm at 3. I might even be as high as 3.5, but I wrote 3 because I felt that, to me, it felt like the most unengaging. I feel like we could make Star Trek puns all over the place.
Yeah.
Space, engage, and all these things. I just felt like it was the most distanced and unengaging of the stories that could be told with this group of characters, you know, in the new Star Trek films. I tried to explain to you, I can't even remember, I was just looking up, I can't even remember the Star Trek movie, but it felt like the most passive of them, not the least enjoyable of them, but the most passive is when they went, when Picard and that group went to a planet where people just didn't age anymore, and they made a whole movie out of this.
Right.
And I thought, that's not a movie, that's an episode of The Next Generation.
Right.
And in so many ways, this just didn't have the accelerant to facilitate feeling like a major motion picture. This felt like a 2-hour film that might be on, you know, Sci-Fi for some reason. They wanted to do that, or it felt like an episodic thing. There were things about the film that I wound up kind of liking, even though I'm not wild about this version of these characters, but most of what I enjoyed often was the interpersonal stuff that happened between characters when they were on their various away missions.
Yeah, there was some decent stuff of characters just talking to each other.
Right, for the first time, you know, the last film just cribbed entirely in ways that drove me nuts from The Wrath of Khan. Like, don't do these things.
Yeah.
Don't steal from something else that's already out there. And then don't compound that by having characters say lines that were from other characters, but are the same line, like that stuff drives me nuts. This was original. Like it actually said, look, this is where we've put the characters so far. And now we got to have a bad thing that they have to fight. But I also want these conflicts and these resolutions between them to come up. Let's do that. And I thought that stuff was actually really great. Every single thing that had anything to do with the adversary of the film, I found so terribly boring and absolutely not interesting in any way or engaging to me outside of the fact that the lead bad guy, the lead alien is Idris Elba. And at times I was looking through the makeup to see like, where is his face?
Right.
Like how high is that head?
There was a lot of the movie too, that was, I think the writing of the screenplay was a little too interested in like the reveal at the end like that it was a secret or something.
Right.
And it, so that it was like, well, we can't talk about anything before we get there.
Right.
But then the end of that is that you didn't say anything
right. There were moments that even though I truly despise the personification of James Kirk in these films, I started seeing him human. You know, he was really becoming a character instead of a pastiche or a caricature of all these other things. I started seeing like there were some weaknesses, and I mean this in a good way, to like the character. Like he was proving himself, you know, kind of faulted in ways that are good for growth of character. And I really like the dynamic between what was happening with Spock and even the ancillary stuff. Wasn't real wild about the stuff with Simon Pegg in it, but almost exclusively my big gripe in this is the writing. And strangely enough, like what you were describing to me before we even saw it, or I guess it was right after we saw it, that Simon Pegg is back to do more work on this. And I thought strangely the worst part of the film, well, maybe that's actually wrong.
Yeah, J.J. Abrams gave an interview recently where he is, where people are kind of talking about that a lot on the internet as his only job right now is to try to keep Simon Pegg on the franchise.
I thought the worst part of the story was actually, you know, the writing, which sounds a little redundant, but I'll be damned if the most annoying thing, and I told you this, is, you know, Lynn's crazy torquing of the camera lens left right and left and spinning
it's always spinning counterclockwise clockwise. It switches.
It does. Right? It goes back and forth,
but it's always spinning and panning.
Right. And it's
most of the time it's doing both at the same time, but it's just always, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, what's interesting actually is if you have a camera that never stops moving, not because you should film every movie like that, but because it is a thing that does something and there's lots of movies like the long good night is a movie
that's a perpetual motion
where it's just that the camera never stops moving.
Right.
It doesn't move really fast. Right.
Or upside down.
It doesn't.
You know,
yeah. It doesn't make you woozy or whatever, mm-hmm. but this is like somebody seeing a line in a book on how to make film and, you know, running the wrong direction with it or something and going, you know what, if you actually, you know, like there's a scene in Alfred Hitchcock movie. I can't remember which one it is, where the opening of the film is the guy getting the bomb out of the car or putting the bomb in the car.
Yeah.
And there's about six straight minutes
of this
where the camera never stops moving and it follows this guy all around and it's unnerving.
Yeah.
It's interesting to watch that scene just to go, how's that doing? How's that making me feel weird?
Right.
Just because that, whatever. And this is an example of somebody taking that and going, well, but what if we turn it up to 11? Right?
I gotta tell you, it made me miss J.J. Abrams' lens flare, you know, fetish. Right. I hate the lens flares, but this, strangely, and we saw this in 3D. We just saw it Friday night, and when it's not happening, I actually think the film is kind of nice in 3D.
The 3D is pretty cool for a lot of it.
I won't suggest anyone see it in 3D.
No,
to be honest,
me either.
I've seen tons of films in 3D and without. I've seen the shaky cam stuff. I was with a friend who couldn't watch Gladiator because the weird shaky cam stuff was giving him vertigo. Like it's really strange. I almost kind of got motion sick from, and it wasn't even motion sick, but that's the closest, you know, appointment I can give you. I just was getting like a headache.
There were times
like it was awful.
There were weirdly two different things for me when you're rotating the lens and panning at the same time,
right,
which this movie does frequently.
Yeah.
If you're looking at the wrong thing in 3D, it becomes blurry.
It does. It absolutely does.
It's like, do you not look at this and
right,
realize that now you can't see? And the other thing is there's sometimes in the movie where it rotates and zooms at the same time.
Yeah.
And I swear it makes you want to look away.
Right.
It's
I
like,
agree.
I just don't want to keep looking at that anymore.
There, you know,
because it will do it for a long time.
It does.
It just
not
keeps
just a quick
doing
thing.
It. Yeah.
There's enough instances of this happening that it became so distracting that I actually felt like penalizing the film for it. And I did. There wasn't a lot of interest in what was happening for me. I actually sat through this film feeling off and on, but mostly on. I was bored.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, God, pick this up. Like I'll say this for the J.J. Abrams films in opposition to this one, where I don't know that I was bored necessarily at any point. I just was in disagreement with
yeah,
his choices. The choices, both aesthetically and narratively, I just found to be not the characters he was supposed to represent. But I was never bored.
Right.
This one, I wasn't falling asleep bored, but I was just kind of sitting there going, wait a minute, you got this great budget, you got this great sandbox, this huge universe, and this isn't inherently a bad thing, a bad adversary, but what you're doing with him and
right,
them, it's not interesting to me. I don't care.
And this movie, too, I totally agree with that. And the weird thing about it is I think if this was an hour-long episode of a new Star Trek show,
right,
it would be better.
It would be better. It would have been
because,
better served. Yeah, I agree.
Because you can't just sit there wasting time.
Right.
You can't
right,
just have a bunch of filler. If it's an hour long, then the people writing it have to go, look, we have to make it make sense. We
yeah,
have to bring this all together faster. And this is a movie that has like a 45-minute story
yeah,
that it has, you know, 2 hours to tell.
Right.
And so you're doing a lot of just staring at stuff for no real reason, or
right,
there's a bunch of filler that doesn't necessarily connect with anything, or you've got people writing the movie and bringing it together who want to show off certain effects or want to do certain stuff like that. So we have to look at it.
Right.
And you've got this idea for a space battle,
yeah,
right, that where it's a billion tiny little ships versus a big ship. And
right,
somebody thinks it's really interesting to watch that happen in space.
Right.
And so Idris Elba, who's the main villain, he's got this horde,
right,
or whatever.
Hive or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, he's
yeah,
got whatever, where he's got all these soldiers who just each have their, you know, everyone on the Enterprise has one ship instead
right,
of
each
being
four,
in a big
yeah,
giant ship. Right. And they all have these little motorcycles
yeah,
that they all fly together and just run into everything
yeah,
and
right,
destroy it, which here's a movie. I know there are a lot of people complaining about the science and technical things of something. But here's a movie that, you know, is just begging for it.
Sure.
And
yeah,
I almost like built purposely for it, it seems like.
Yeah.
It's almost like the people writing the movie went, screw those people. I'm going to make some stuff that really makes no sense.
Right.
And so
right,
let them say
you
something about
this. You want
something
to complain
right,
about here. Yeah.
And right, but it leads to, you know, obviously such weird things. It's weird to try and think about how that could work.
Right.
Why that would work. Why nothing has any defense
right
to anything
all,
right?
Well, they tried.
They go to the big giant space station.
Yeah,
which apparently is run by pacifist Starfleet
yeah,
because they have no defense
nothing,
for anything.
Right, they're not ready for.
There's
anything,
nothing they could defend against.
Even
once,
a solar wind would take them out.
Right.
They're not ready for a thing.
Once
yeah,
once you get inside, then
right,
they doubly have no defense to anything. Whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But it leads to weird things because you need billions of these ships, and we're watching you have billions of these ships flying around, up against, you know, and it's somebody just thought, here's an awesome picture.
Right.
little enterprise being dwarfed by the fact that there are billions of these things.
Right.
But you really have to have billions of those things. And you go down to the planet and see Idris Elba and see those ships, and all of a sudden it's like camera one was broken. It looks like we're filming a low budget TV show when we look at those scenes.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's like jarring, right? Even the sets are like, as he's walking around, it's like some weird, like 80s episode of Doctor Who, where you make stuff look futuristic by just attaching a tube to the wall, even though, and get a couple hundred of them and bring some guys in here and just stick tubes to the wall. Sure. And now it's science fiction, right?
Right.
And it's weird. It's such an odd disconnect, mm-hmm. especially when earlier in the movie we were watching this giant space station and all the stuff we're supposed to be impressed with because the gravity of the sphere in space and the buildings pointing in different directions and all that. And we're supposed to think that looks really cool. And there's so much of it that is just so, you know, somebody wanted to film something and somebody involved in this movie said, dude, that makes no sense. Right. Yeah. And they said, I don't care.
Right.
Look at it. Look how pretty it is.
Let me turn it around.
And like I said, when this movie was, there's no way Idris Elba has that many people.
Right.
And if this was an hour long show, we would explain how he has that many people.
Right.
We would reference
Once we
get to the big reveal, then all of a sudden you go, wait a minute, how does he have anyone?
Right.
How does he have any people? That show would explain what's going on with him more. And this movie, oddly enough, doesn't have time to, even though it has way too much time to tell its story. It doesn't want to talk about that. It wants to show you shiny things and show action shots of Captain Kirk riding his motorcycle around. And so you end up with all this weird stuff. You know, there's no way he has that many people. There's no way that space station exists. Such thing as that space station, right? If they took every planet the Federation of Planets has ever seen or knows exists and put them through a meat grinder, they wouldn't have enough metal to build that thing. There's no such thing. The thing is like bigger than, you know, like 1,000 suns.
Right.
I mean,
it's huge.
It's the biggest thing ever. Anyway, but there's so much time of this movie, and we're totally running out of time. We'll get out of here in just a couple of minutes. But there's so much time spent on this movie, and, you know, I don't hate the movie for it, really. But there's so much time spent on, I want somebody... Captain Kirk demanded to ride a motorcycle or, you know, whatever. Here's an action idea I had and whatever, but there's a bunch of different people coming up with ideas. And then somebody sits there and goes, I have to make all these ideas fit into the one movie. And then that turns it into there not being enough time to really deliver a story, to really get anything about this guy. And, you know, the whole thing is, so focused on it being a mystery, and then we find out, and then but we never get enough stuff because it wants to hide everything, so we don't get enough to really care about the reveal when it happens.
It rests an awful lot on the investment of characters that you've known from a billion, you know, TV shows now and films, you know, in a lot of ways this film wouldn't work at all, even in the stuff that I like, if it was just the third film of a recent, you know, series. Like, it really means that I need to know about Kirk and Spock and Scotty and Uhura, like, and their relationships with each other to facilitate a lot of what's happening. But still, I did think it was good. But I echo everything you said. You know, I won't actually echo it, but it was strange. This film, and how it was strange for me, is it was oddly disappointing for a film I had very dangerous expectations for, because I don't like the films that they've been making.
Right.
Yet still, I was curious about it because I thought it might be interesting to see someone other than J.J. Abrams at the helm, because I felt like a lot of the things that bothered me were specific to J.J. Abrams. And I found out this time, I kind of miss J.J. Abrams. So I got what I wanted, but it wasn't what I wanted.
The positives that you do get out of the J.J. Abrams film, they were not there.
They still outweigh the negatives, but the negatives are still like he's put these people on a course of action. Like the character I still don't wholly agree with in what they do, but I'm getting closer to it. And I'll be damned still also at the end where they're having like their kind of celebration and there are a lot of echoes of the people they're about to become. And like the Kirk that I see celebrating his birthday is that Kirk that I see later, which William Shatner would play right. in a version. Again, it's a different timeline and I understand these things, but I see now that they are maturing in a way that is good for the story. But the weird camera stuff, the uninteresting characters, the not so interesting writing, which kind of deflates me for the next one that's coming up because apparently the same crew writing it is maybe going to be involved. I just wasn't there for it. And I was ready to be because this was the one Star Trek movie that I was ready to be there for because it didn't have J.J. Abrams there.
Right.
And,
you know, just the episodic nature of it throws it all out of whack. This movie for me is sort of like if what you were doing is going back through the original Star Trek episodes
right.
and looking at the stories of each one and going, I can make a movie out of that one.
Yeah.
That one not so much.
Right.
I can make a movie out of that one.
Yeah.
And somewhere you picked the wrong one.
Yeah.
Like
you picked a passive one that felt a little safer for whatever reason felt interesting to you. But real quick, too, the two things about the film that were distracting ultimately didn't inherently become so much. So this whole big brouhaha about Sulu having a same-sex partner was handled with such easy and deftness. It wasn't complicated or obstructive. It was just, you know, there's his partner.
Right.
Okay, that's fine. I get Sulu.
And
you know,
it's like if you blink, you'll miss
George
it.
Takei, right.
It's not a...
And George has a hold in it, you know, and a stake for stuff with Sulu that I never will because he played him for zillions of years. I respect it, but it's not a problem. And it's just kind of sad to see Anton Yelchin's last performance, even though he passed away right after the film was done or right before the film was released, actually. And he's really good in the film.
Yeah,
you know, he was a fine actor.
He
didn't hurt the film at all.
No,
he was good in a lot of other stuff too. And I thought watching him was kind of like that moment where you always watch, I don't know, The Crow, and you're like, man, Brandon Lee probably dies in this scene. You know, that's a harder one.
Right.
But watching this film and seeing him and going, man, that guy just died. That sucked. But it didn't. And that's a credit to his performance. He's really good as Chekhov.
Yeah.
You know, he really pushes that accent.
But, yeah, he really
but
does.
But I think he does it just to the point of being bearable hilarious.
But it's almost like, you know, it's the 20 whatever century version of having it, right?
I noticed it.
The accent has progressed, apparently, over time.
So,
which maybe doesn't actually make sense, but don't think about that too much. But before we get out, I do want to say, because you were talking about Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, I don't love the characters in this movie. I don't love exactly what they're doing with the theories necessarily. Maybe they're not bad. Maybe whatever. I think, frankly, in a very weird way, Carl Urban is my favorite.
He's become really great.
Person
for Bones.
Doing a character in these movies. But as far as Captain Kirk goes, I think we've at least finally kind of maybe progressed to where we're not getting like an impersonation of Captain Kirk.
Right.
We're getting something more like in Looper.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, where you're not doing an impersonation of the future. You're trying to do an impersonation of who it's going to be. Right. Or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think we've actually taken some steps.
Yeah.
Towards that. So that's good. And maybe that will progress.
Hopefully.
Or whatever. I still don't like Spock though.
I don't know. I like what he's doing.
I don't feel like he gets enough time. You know,
that's what
I think. Yeah. I think they don't give you enough of Spock. They really just demand that you bring it all yourself.
Yeah.
And so all we have to do is like, he doesn't really have to do anything. We could just look at him and you'll go, oh yeah, Spock. Right. And he doesn't have to give you a character because the movie is trying too hard to force you into doing all their work for him. I don't know. Anyway, so not a lot of fun this week.
Man, what a rough week. And Jason Bourne, man. Maybe that's
it. It better be. Seriously.
Yeah.
So we got to get out of here. Thanks again for wasting all your time with us.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And please share and subscribe to us on iTunes. Rate us on iTunes. And otherwise, trick your friends into listening to us. Thanks.
Bye.